What is up, fantasy fans? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. No, I am not James Coe with a frog in his throat. I'm Marcus Grant. James Coe is under the knife right now. I am joined, of course, as always, by Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, and you're officially the whiz kid from Wisconsin.
I guess Gelhar. It's kind of stuck. So
it's kind of stuck.
Not so going anywhere.
That's your name now. You don't get a choice in the matter. But our friend James Coe, just moments before we started this podcast, tweeted that he is going into surgery. Wish me luck. Good luck, James. He's a rotator cuff. Rotator cuff.
So lobotomy.
Hopefully he's back. And
for all of his crazy fantasy
and the slider is just as good as ever by the time he comes back. But we'll miss you, James. We look forward to getting you back in the seat next week. In the meantime, we will do our best to hold it down and keep this train on the track. So, plenty to talk about. In fact, today is going to be pretty much almost all rankings all the time. We'll do some other things as well. We've got some headlines to get to. We've got some of your Twitter questions, which, by the way, you can always hit us up on Twitter, at NFL Fantasy. Of course, you can hit us up individually on Twitter as well, if you can find us. That's the game here. But you can always ask us questions there. We will certainly do our best to get to some of them here on this show. But we're going to talk a lot of rankings today. They will be live by the time you listen to this on NFL.com/fantasy/rankings. You can see what we think about where certain players should be ranked. You can laugh and point and mock because we know that's what you're going to do anyway. We're ready for it, so come get us. In the meantime, I'm going to say hi to the guys behind the glass, by the way. Of course, Sully is back there. Is that B-Mac I see over there in the corner?
Brandon, the Irishman.
The Irishman over there. A couple of Irishmen back there, huh?
Yeah. It's Sullivan, last name. That's pretty Irish.
There you go. So we've got Sullivan. We've got B-Mac back there. We've got our man, the franchise, is holding it down. And our new face here. You will see plenty of him writing on NFL.com in case you have not followed him in his previous incarnation. Matt Harmon, who just joined our crew earlier this week. So we're glad to have him. We're going to sit here. He's going to sit here and watch us do this and hopefully not run away screaming and move back to Virginia.
Maybe point and laugh as well.
He'll probably point and laugh as well.
Glass.
Exactly. So we've got a full house here in the studio, and got plenty to go on. But Sully, let's do some headlines here. We'll start with a couple of big wide receiver news pieces, and we'll start down in Dallas. Dez Bryant was tweeting on Monday. His tweet, "As much as I love football on my beautiful babies, I apologize, hashtag Cowboy Nation, but I will not be there if no deal, hashtag fact." Now, this isn't the first time Dez has said this sort of thing in the offseason, said that he was willing to sit out some preseason games, says he's willing to sit out real games now if he and the Cowboys cannot come to a long-term deal by the end of Wednesday. All right. Fabs, you being the resident Cowboy guy, you having, you know, a couple Twitter conversations with Dez Bryant, how serious should we think he is about this?
I think he's very serious. I think he's dug in, and this is something that could eventually alter his fantasy value, because if there can't be an agreement reached and Wednesday is the deadline, then we've got an issue on our hands, because the big issue is the guaranteed money between the two sides. And if they can't end up agreeing on something within the next, 24 to 48 hours, whatever the case may be, we're going to have an issue in terms of how far do you drop Dez Bryant in your rankings? Do you drop him at all based on what we've seen from players who hold out of training camp? We've seen it happen to guys like Larry Johnson and Darrell Revis and Chris Johnson.
Just MJD.
Off the top of my head, guys who hold out, they either suffer an injury during the regular season or their numbers drop. Now, Dez is young. He doesn't need training camp. He's got a great rapport with Tony Romo. So I don't know if I'm worried about that so much, but he's one of the best talents in the NFL at the wide receiver position. So I don't know how far you would drop him if we hit training camp and he's not there. I wouldn't be surprised if he fell somewhere in the beginning of the third round in a 10-team draft, but I can't see him falling any further than that. Remember, there's a precedent for this. Emmitt Smith, back in, I believe, was 93, missed the first two games of the regular season holding out and came back and still had a Dallas fantastic went 0-2. Season. Right. And the Cowboys went on to do pretty well that year. But Emmitt was one of the few players who actually has held out into the regular season.
And then crushed it.
In the NFL and then done very well.
Yeah, so now
you have to really keep tabs on what's going on with the
right.
situation.
It's not going to – and if he holds out through camp, this narrative is not going to end anytime soon, and we're going to have to watch it closely mm-hmm. to know mm-hmm. when he does come back and how he's looking and his health and stuff, because your biggest fear is like he gets like a hamstring or something, and then that dogs him for like a month plus in the season.
Right. Now, I mean, I'm looking at – so we did a staff mock draft last week. We put it up on NFL.com on Monday, and looking at that mock draft, Dez Bryant goes with the second pick in the second round, which – seems perfectly reasonable. I imagine that's about where he's going to go in plenty of drafts all around the country. I mean, but Fab's mentioned it, Alex. I mean, how far, you know, if let's just say he's not going to be there week one. If we know for a fact that Dez Bryant will not be there week one, how far down do you think about taking him at that point?
I think you can still grab him as a wide receiver one or, you know, in that top 10 area just because, as Fab said, he's so good and he's so talented. 1 week doesn't scare me. It's when you start getting farther and farther in that. I mean, like, Le'Veon Bell's got a 3-game suspension, and he's still going in the top 10 among running backs. It'd be the same thing for Dez, but it's like I said, it's not going to end anytime soon until ink hits paper on a long-term deal for Dez, so we're just going to have to keep our eyes open and watch it.
Then you have all this collusion talk, too, between
the Broncos, we don't need to get into that.
Cowboys, Demaryius Thomas, I know. We've had enough players who are going to be suspended for the first few weeks of the season, so let's hope that Dez Bryant isn't someone we have to worry about missing time.
Well, real quick, I mean, it doesn't look as serious, but you mentioned the collusion with Demaryius Thomas and the Broncos and all this stuff going on. And Demaryius right now says there's still a pretty big gap between he and the team in terms of getting a long-term deal done. Now, there certainly hasn't been any talk of holding out or anything like that, but any feeling from either one of you guys that maybe if this thing doesn't go the right way, that maybe Demaryius decides he wants to, you know, not show up to Denver at any point?
You never know. I mean, we saw Marshawn Lynch, was it last year, who ended up holding out for a part of training camp.
I remember that fire
yeah,
drill.
He never plays in training camp.
Right, right. So I'm not worried about Demaryius Thomas. I have him ranked higher than Dez Bryant at wide receiver, and I'd have him ranked higher than Dez regardless of the collusion situation or a potential holdout. It sounds to me like he is going to be there when training camp opens, and that's not the case with Dez right now. So I'm not worried about Demaryius. He's a second-round pick.
I think Dez has his heels set in a little more than Demaryius.
Right.
So I'm a little less worried about Demaryius as well.
Other news headline, Colin Kaepernick says the 49ers changes are for good. Now, as a 49er fan, I would certainly like to believe that because most of the changes we've seen this offseason have been ungood. So I'm trying to hope that maybe Kaepernick has something. Now, this is kind of unofficially, I guess, kind of turned out to be Colin Kaepernick week. We had our instant debate earlier this week about whether or not we believed he could get back to being a top 10 quarterback. The consensus seemed to be no. As I continue my Bust a Move series, I am now watching tape of Colin Kaepernick to try to determine whether or not he can bounce back from last season. So, I mean, look, I know as a Niner fan, I am certainly pessimistic about what I've seen from my team in the offseason. I'm trying to keep the good fight going, but from a fantasy perspective, Alex, when you look at what the Niners have, you know, we know Carlos Hyde is there. We know that Torrey Smith has come in. We know there's a brand new offensive coordinator. I mean, is this Colin Kaepernick blowing smoke, or is there something really here?
I'm seeing a bit of a haze in this story, you know, to bring back our smokescreen hype train argument we always have all the time. There are things to like about this offense, but there are too many question marks for me to start buying in too highly. I'm worried about Torrey Smith, and with Colin Kaepernick, for as mobile as he is, he was, like, what, second most sacked quarterback
most sack
last
behind
year?
Blake Bortles.
Don't like to hear that. Carlos Hyde can be great, but he's unproven. Is Reginald Bush going to stay healthy? Mm-hmm. You know, is Vernon Davis going to bounce back, or is he, you know, already in the twilight of his career? There are things to like, but maybe that's why he said the changes are for good and are not for the better or
what
great.
We really need to see from Kaepernick, because fantasy and reality are different, is a guy who's going to run the football a little bit more and be allowed to roll out of the pocket and use his feet, much like Russell Wilson was allowed to do last year. And we also saw how successful he was both on the field and from a fantasy standpoint. Kaepernick's worked a lot on his accuracy. He's worked with Kurt Warner during the offseason, and we shall see if he's improved in terms of accuracy, in terms of how he throws the ball downfield. He'll have that threat now in Torrey Smith, who can take the vertical game to a different level with the Niners. Of course, Michael Crabtree's gone. Marcus Grant very happy about that. Now he's with the Oakland Raiders. Kaepernick is like an intriguing QB2. He's not a guy that I'm drafting as a QB1. He's somebody I really liked a couple of years ago. You remember
Everybody had that giant
Kaepernick jersey on because he ran with the football. The Niners sort of went away from that. The offensive line was an issue. And now, you know, you lose Mike Iupati to the Arizona Cardinals. Mm-hmm. You lose Davis to retirement. So that is a big question mark, too. As good as Kaepernick can be and as good as he is in terms of his elusiveness, I mean, if he's getting bum-rushed on a good percentage of his plays, it's going to be hard for him to make plays on the field.
You have to wonder if they're going to use him more in the rushing game, too, because I was just thinking about it. Remember, he only had one rushing touchdown last year. Do you remember what that one was? It was the 90-yarder he ripped against the Chargers, I believe.
And if you remember, he just missed another one. Remember in that game against the Rams where he tried to sneak it in? Then he fumbled
the ball.
So if you had Kaepernick that game, you lost basically 8 points.
Yeah. You know, I will say this with about Kaepernick. The one thing, I am optimistic about this talk of him improving his accuracy. I wonder about his decision making. And I said somewhat jokingly when Jim Tomsula took over, the first thing I would have done is sat Kaepernick down in a chair, Clockwork Orange style, and made him watch tape of Russell Wilson. Just made him watch that until he couldn't stand anymore, and he and the old Droogs decided they're going to go throw the football around.
Speaking of Russell Wilson, real quick, I don't want to get off the tracks too much, but have you heard the reviews about Marcus Mariota and not only his accuracy, but Ken Wisenhunt's desire to use him like Russell Wilson? He's an intriguing guy. No quarterbacks typically don't put up good numbers in their rookie season, but because of his ability to run the football, I think Mariota's going to end up starting being drafted late in most leagues.
I mean, I watched Mariota tape, and I thought the thing that I took away from watching his tape is that he reminds me of Alex Smith, you know, in a good way.
Well, that's not a good thing.
No, but in a good way, in a way that, you know, he's a very athletic guy. I mean, Smith obviously...
You mean sneakily athletic?
Right, exactly. All those code words there. But he's an athletic guy. He's very accurate. He makes very good decisions. You know, I don't know how much he's going to go downfield with the ball, but I mean, I think there's potential there for Marcus Mariota.
Yeah.
Definitely is. So that's our headlines. We will, like I said, we're rankings coming up in a little bit, but first, want to get to Twitter questions. Can we open up the mailbag, please, Sully?
You got mail.
Awesome. Real quick, Jake Bender at Jake LB Namath. He must be a fan of Joe Willie.
Yeah.
He says, I trade Le'Veon Bell and get Murray, presumably DeMarco.
Yes.
And Peyton Manning. Is this worth it? Fabs, do you make this deal?
Trading Le'Veon Bell and getting Murray and Peyton Manning, and this is, I'm assuming...
Assuming a standard league.
A standard seasonal league. Boy, I tell you something. If this is a team that's not... It's not a keeper league, okay? That's the one thing that I always worry about with some of these questions. If it's a keeper league, there's no way I'm trading Le'Veon Bell. In a standard league, boy, getting Murray and Peyton Manning, that's a lot. That is a lot. And I don't love Murray this year, but Bell's already been suspended for 3 games. That's something that I would seriously consider. Seriously consider. You're getting a top 5 quarterback in fantasy. You're getting the number one running back in fantasy from last year, who projects now to be more of an RB2. If Bell's suspension is decreased. Well, of course, that's going to improve his value. But if he's going to miss 3 games, I can get Murray and Peyton.
Yeah,
seasonal league.
I like it.
That's
love
not bad at all.
But when you got to look at a trade like this with the value you're getting in, like you said, you're getting a top 5 QB. Maybe he slips top 10, and a running back who wouldn't surprise me if he finished in the top 10 again. But you get a safe bet. You know, his floor is probably still finishing in the top 20. That's fantastic value for one player that's also going to miss 3 games right now and a bye week. That's, you know, a third of the fantasy regular season almost.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I feel like this conversation, and obviously this is real life, if Le'Veon Bell wasn't suspended at all, if he was going to be there for week 1, I feel like we would be completely different.
Right.
Yeah.
We'd feel very different about this.
Absolutely.
Game. So, one more before we get to the rankings.
Sully's got another drop for us.
Oh,
here.
Do you?
Mail it in.
Is that from The Office?
I heard Mail It In.
No, that's from Van Wilder.
Oh, from Van Wilder.
There
okay.
We go.
It sounded also like a high-strung
Michael Scott
for a second. It wasn't the clearest, but all right, I got it. It's a good one.
High-strung Michael Scott. That seems a little redundant.
Yeah, a little bit.
Ryan Pulaski, RPZ83, asks, what is your opinion on Macklin at the flex in a dynasty league? Alex, we'll start with you with this one.
Oh, boy. I'm not the biggest fan of Jeremy Maclin this year for a lot of reasons. In the flex in a dynasty league, I mean, I get, it depends on the dynasty league. Like ours, we start three wide receivers and a flex, and it's PPR. And in that
we don't mess around.
In that kind of situation, I don't mind it because he's going to get his catches, but you got to worry about him getting touchdowns or getting downfield. So as the flex, I guess I like it. I would prefer to maybe go with somebody that has a little more upside, like one of these rookies or a breakout kind of guy, like a, you know, maybe a John Brown or somebody, Nelson Aguilar, but I don't mind it.
Maclin scares me. He really does. Great year in 2014. Of course, he was in Chip Kelly's offense, which has far superior fantasy potential than the Chiefs from a wide receiver perspective. If you look back at Andy Reid, I've thrown this stat out to you guys before. In his time during his time with the Philadelphia Eagles, he was not a guy who produced 1,000-yard wide receivers. The most any wide receiver ever had playing in his offense in Philadelphia was Terrell Owens, and that was 1,200 yards. There were more seasons than not when his leading wide receiver in terms of yardage did not hit 1,000 yards. I would not be shocked if Maclin sees a decline down to the 900-yard range. 6 to 8 touchdowns, that puts him in wide receiver three territory. Alex Smith is not a good deep ball thrower. Maclin makes a lot of hay throwing the deep ball or catching the deep ball. Even last year with Mark Sanchez and Nick Foles throwing him the ball, he was quite successful. But again, that was in a completely different offense. This Chiefs offense predicated on the run and Jamaal Charles. So it's a dynasty league. You can't trade him. You could, but I don't know that you get much for him in a dynasty league right now. Maclin is a guy who I don't feel comfortable with in a flex unless it's a deeper league and you're kind of starting guys at that level, just like you mentioned with our dynasty league where you're going three in a flex. And if it's a PPR league, okay, maybe there's a little more appeal there. But overall, I don't see Maclin repeating what he did last year.
I don't know if you guys heard this, but the Chiefs didn't have a receiver who caught a touchdown pass.
Wait,
at all
what?
Last year. I know, right? Shocking. Look, I feel like if I have Jeremy Maclin at a flex spot in my dynasty league, that he is basically a seat filler until I can find something else. You know, Alex mentioned getting somebody like Nelson Aguilar or, you know, one of the rookies coming in, you know, one of the, you know, the non Kevin White, Amari Cooper rookies coming in that maybe you can get and plug in that spot, even maybe a Davante Adams, just somebody younger that I'd feel a little more confident plugging into that spot. I don't know that Maclin is terrible. I do think that the Chiefs will have a wide receiver catch a touchdown pass this year. It was too much of an anomaly to happen 2 years in a row.
Right.
But I am of the opinion that it just seems a little counterproductive to have a speedy, deep threat wide receiver with a quarterback who doesn't throw the ball more than 7 yards down the field.
Yeah, I mean, Maclin won't be terrible.
No.
I mean, no, but I mean, he had 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns last year. That's not going to happen in Kansas City.
No, not at all going to happen. So, thank again for your emails and your tweets. You can tweet us, as I mentioned, at NFL Fantasy. By the way, I've been bereft in mentioning the fact you can, of course, find us at NFL.com/fantasy. You can go and sign up for NFL.com. Free fantasy football. $3.99. That is the best price of all. Come find us there. You can also find us at NFL.com/draftkit. We have all sorts of news and information and goodies and opinion and stuff. And you can
DraftKit is also a place you can find rankings.
You can find rankings. Look at that.
Segway.
Right. But speaking of rankings, so I'm gonna completely go off the train tracks here.
Oh, great.
Last night I ranked my top 5 superhero movies of all time on Twitter, and I was having a great conversation with the people out there with the tweeps. I went Dark Knight 1, Avengers 2, I had Iron Man 3. Not Iron Man 3, but
thank you.
The original Iron Man, because the second and third one sucked. And then Superman, Batman with Jack Nicholson 4, and then Superman the movie 5.
Really?
What about those
like,
rankings?
You didn't have like Batman and Robin or Batman?
No,
Batman
no, that was terrible.
Batman Forever. Forever.
Terrible. I didn't. And Guardians of the Galaxy just missed. And I think one of the more underrated superhero movies of the last 10 years, Captain America, the Winter Soldier, which is better than the last 2 Iron Man movies. And I would say right on par with the last Avengers movie.
Did Guardians of the Galaxy make it in your top 5?
Said it just
10.
Missed.
Just missed.
Top 10.
Okay.
I love that movie. That was great.
Yeah.
So I know you guys I don't know anything about Ant-Man, and I know Alex is already down on it. I don't know if it's...
No. And Alex is okay. I'm the one who's down on it.
You're down on it.
Alex is optimistic about it.
Now, what about this...
I don't know if I say optimistic, but I'm going to go see it.
I admittedly don't know much about Suicide Squad, but it seems pretty cool. Is Joker in the Suicide Squad, or is he not?
No.
It's his daughter? Is that what it is?
Harley Quinn's
kind of his assistant,
okay.
Sort of.
And that's Margot Robbie. Is that who's going to be in?
Yes.
Correct.
Oh, okay. I see what this was. This was all
I'm going to
for
see
you
that.
To talk about Margot Robbie.
So is that
saw
like,
right through your plan.
Is that like that? Is that huge in the comic book world? The Suicide Squad.
Not huge, but it's got a following.
It's a thing.
Is it?
It's a thing.
So
it's...
is it going to do better or worse than Guardians of the Galaxy?
Worse.
Guardians of the Galaxy was ginormous.
Had a lot of money.
Was ginormous.
It's not to say it won't do well, but...
But it won't. It won't.
See, ranking anything is just fun. Ranking superhero movies, ranking hot chicks, ranking fantasy players, ranking the best Yankee teams of all time. Well, maybe that would just
have to
be
say,
me.
Though,
that seems like
I
it's
love,
just a lot of fun.
That seems to have a very
I love how I had this
there.
Smooth segue into the next part of the podcast. And Fabs just, is like, hold up, completely off topic.
Well, you know what? Because we talk fantasy football. I think we'd like to have some fun on the show. We're all admitted dorks on the show here. And, I'm speaking for you
this
guys.
This is the SS Minnow of podcasts.
This
way.
Is what I'm saying, right? So you
go
superhero segue because you're seeing the Suicide Squad trailer out, and then Batman and Superman is coming out next
that, don't
year.
Get me started on that.
And by the way, so I like how they tied in Man of Steel to this Dawn of Justice movie because now they're saying that Bruce Wayne is ticked off at Superman because in the battle at the end with Zod when Metropolis was destroyed, Bruce Wayne.
You mean the part of the movie
building,
I was openly scoffing at,
right.
Almost yelling at in the theater, something I've never done in my life.
Bruce Wayne is basically, he's had his buildings damaged or destroyed and people that he knew were killed in this, and that's why he's pissed at Superman.
Yeah, great. So he can go and die because it shouldn't be a fight. All right, we're not going to get
I know, seriously. Like, I had so many questions, but like, I'm just going to like, I'm gonna table those for
all right,
now.
Can we get back to actual rankings?
We're going to get
let's
back.
Let's do it.
Let's get
do
back
it.
To the show real quick. Before we start this, I mentioned you can find us at NFL.com/draftkit. You can also go there. You can do live drafts. You can do mock drafts. You can sign up. All sorts of fantasy goodness all at your fingertips. You can do it on your desktop. You can do it on your mobile phone. Life will be great. Absolutely. So now the moment you've all been waiting for. Yeah, buddy. Sing it. It is time to do our rankings. I mentioned you can find them online, NFL.com/fantasy/rankings. We are going to talk about who we have ranked where, and we're going to go with the four main positions. If you want kicker rankings, you came to the wrong place, friend. We don't waste time
Come
with
on,
here.
Kickers are people, too.
They are people, too. They're just not people we're going to talk about. So we will start at the quarterback position. With our QB rankings, let's just get this out of the way. We all have Aaron Rodgers number one and Andrew Luck number two, right? Like, that's just the thing. That's
and
just
Russell,
how it is.
And Russell
and
Wilson,
Russell Wilson number three, right? Like, so we know those three are the top three. Number four is kind of where it gets interesting. I mean,
Marcus! Ben Roethlisberger.
I know. I feel like I've been drinking the Damashek Kool-Aid. I apologize for some of that. That probably has a lot to do with it. But, I feel like there's – when you look at 4, 5, 6 with Roethlisberger,
seven.
Man, even 7, you know, it's just kind of this jumble of quarterbacks that you can pull out in just about any order and feel like you're going to be okay.
Yeah. I'll pull back the curtain a little bit. I had made an 11th-hour switch before this podcast. I had Roethlisberger at 4-2.
Wow.
But I knocked him down just a little bit. Part of the reason being, though, and I don't know if this is in your thought process, is those first couple weeks, sans Le'Veon Bell, they're not going to be giving it to D'Angelo Williams 25 times a game. Ben Roethlisberger is going to need to be slinging it, and he's got a wealth of targets in the passing game. I think those could help even out. Everybody always points to last year. He had those two games with like 1 million yards and six touchdowns in back-to-back games. It was like an obscene percentage of his fantasy points for the year in two games, something like 30%.
Yep.
The beginning of the year without Le'Veon Bell is going to help them even out that a little bit, and I think he could have some bigger weeks early on and provide some nice value because you can get him late. In drafts.
Which, by the way, last year after his first 6-touchdown game, I think I went on NFL Fantasy Live and said, there's no way Ben Roethlisberger throws 6 touchdowns this week.
And it was against the Ravens, and he had done very little against the Ravens, and he went off. I had
Thanks
him as
a lot,
sit both
jerk.
Weeks, yeah.
That's how winning is done.
Nice job, Fabiano.
So, yeah, I mean, so I've got Ben at 4. We talked about 4 through 7. I've got Roethlisberger at 4, Peyton at 5, Breeze at 6, Matt Ryan at 7. I don't know. I I'm standing by it. I feel good with that.
The thing that worries me about Big Ben is, like Alex said, a lot of that production came in two games, and even more of it, I believe it was four or five. Most of his production, it was about 50%, maybe 45% of his production came in only a handful of games, and then there was other games where he absolutely killed you. Now, what are the advantages? Well, Todd Haley clearly likes to throw the football. We know that. He's got Antonio Brown, the best wide receiver in fantasy football. Martavis Bryant, who I absolutely love, great deep threat, guy who can stretch the football field. He's got Le'Veon Bell when he comes back from the suspension, who caught over 80 passes last year. So there is a lot to like
about
Roethlisberger.
He's got old, reliable, and Heath Miller. And now Marcus Wheaton is the third or even fourth wide receiver. Not as much pressure is going to be on him.
I don't know that Sammy Coates will make much of an impact, but there are weapons there for sure. Now, the thing that I worry about is reliability when it comes to Roethlisberger. He's never really been an elite fantasy quarterback. He's had a couple of good years, but he is not unlike Troy Aikman in that very good quarterback on the football field.
Not as good in fantasy.
But he was ahead of Drew Brees last year. This was his best fantasy season. But again, it came on the heels of those 2 6-touchdown games. Marcus is right. If you have confidence in Roethlisberger as a QB1, you can get him late. We saw that in our mock draft.
Yep.
Same with Tony Romo, who I have 7th. Same with Matt Ryan, who I have 8th. If you want to play the game with Tom Brady, you can draft him late, sit on him for 4 weeks, or however long he's suspended if the suspension is changed. Now, I have Peyton at 4 and Brees at 5. I've got Russell at 3 because I love the running aspect of his game. I love the fact that he now has an actual red zone target that isn't named Marshawn Lynch. It's now Jimmy Graham, who could catch 10 to 12 touchdowns. I just don't see his yardage being the same. Brees, I think, takes a step back, although he'll still be excellent because they're going to run the ball a little bit more. And Peyton Manning, I know he was bad in the last 4 weeks of 2014 better than anyone because he killed me, cost me the championship against Matt Money Smith and a lot of you out there. But look at his numbers in the first 12 games. He was awesome. So I don't think you're going to see great, spectacular Peyton Manning, 55 touchdown Peyton Manning, but you're also not going to see the garbage you saw from him in the last 4 weeks of 2014. Just keep in mind, though, that Gary Kubiak loves to run the football. So this is not going to be a run-and-gun offense where Peyton's going to be back in the shotgun 90% of the time.
However, Matt Schaub had some great years, and it's weird to say that, but Matt Schaub had some great fantasy years with Gary Kubiak at the helm for the Houston Texans, don't forget, where he was like leading the NFL in passing yardage in that same run-first offense.
My feelings on Peyton Manning are about the same as my feelings on Drew Brees, that both these guys will be just fine as your QB1 if you're expecting the big video game numbers. They're just not going to happen this year, and I think with Peyton especially, because of the fade we saw from him late in the season last year, I feel like they're going to do their best to try and save him early in the year just so he has a little bit more left in the arm when they get to weeks, 15, 16, 17, and then, presumably into the postseason as well. So I feel like, they'll be just fine. Those guys will be just fine as your number one quarterback, but if you're looking for Drew Brees to go for 5,000 yards or something like that, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, and every move they made in the offseason, Marcus, was geared towards changing that offense and changing the team, really. Graham is gone, and then you've got Stills gone. You bring in two very good offensive linemen, Andres Pete from the draft, and, of course, Max Unger from the Seattle Seahawks.
Get Spiller to work in the short passing game.
Exactly. So this is a team that has changed. They've obviously decided that what they've been doing the last few years has not been working on offense, so they're going to change things up. Sean Payton is a guy who's not going to ever completely go away from the passing game, which is why I love Brandon Cooks this season. But you could see the Saints trying to run the ball a little bit more with Mark Ingram, who finally met expectations last year, and C.J. Spiller. Spiller is interesting, guys, because isn't it every single year we're all about him, and every single year he disappoints?
This is the year. We'll get to that a little bit later.
Now you have to think that this is it. This is, okay, you play with the Bills, not a great offensive team. This is it, though. You've got the Saints. You've got Brees. You've got Peyton. You've got an offense that will be very, very conducive to fantasy success in terms of a guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield, Reggie Bush, Pierre Thomas. You've got guys who can do that. Cadet caught 40 or 50 passes last year in that offense. So Marcus is right. This
This is the year.
This is the year.
But
all right.
If he doesn't do it now, he ain't never.
That'll never happen. But getting back to quarterbacks real quick, the one name that I did want to get to, Tom Brady. You mentioned him a little bit earlier, Fabs. Obviously, we're waiting to hear. But as we record this, we have not yet heard anything on Tom Brady's appeal of his suspension.
Good save.
So right now, it still sits at 4 games as we are recording this podcast. By the time you listen to it, maybe it's still at 4. Maybe it's been dropped. Who knows? But, I mean, I'm looking at this, and I've got him at 13. Fabs, you got him at 10. Alex, you have him at 9. But it all kind of comes out to be the same. He's a low-end. Right now, he sits as a low-end QB1, maybe a high-end QB2, depending on how you know who else you draft on your roster. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, the suspension gets cut in half. So he misses 2 games. He's back for week 3. I feel like is he solidly back in the top 10 at that point?
For sure.
Well, he's in my top 10 right now. He's just at the end of it.
Yeah, he's just hanging on right now.
I would say he'd probably move back up to 6 behind Drew Brees and ahead of Cam Newton.
I was thinking 7 right behind Newton, but ahead of Roethlisberger and Tannehill for me.
Yeah.
Who was a name I wanted to bring up too? Tannehill, we've talked about him a lot on the podcast. I have him in the top 10. Marcus, you have him in the top 10.
I've got him at 9.
Fabs has him just outside at 12.
And he's a guy that I might flip-flop with Philip Rivers, because there's a little bit of upside there with Rivers. You've kind of seen
the
ceiling already. So thank goodness we're only in the middle of July, so I can still change my mind. But
right, these are not set in stone.
He's right on the cusp of QB, low QB1.
Which is why I kind of like sliding him into the bottom half of my top 10, is because, you know, we always talk about drafting upside at so many other positions.
Sure.
And if there's nobody this season probably with more upside, that you said he's on that cusp with Ryan Tannehill. Could he flop? Sure. Could he slip back down to QB2? Whatever. But with the weapons that are there, that offense, his maturation, his new big deal, all the signs are pointing to a great season for Ryan Tannehill. So he's somebody late. I think I took him in our mock, actually.
You did.
Round 12 or something like that.
I mean, I thought you got really good value on him. He's a guy that I've really been pushing this year. I'm not sure if he's going to make my ride or die team this year. You know, he's under consideration. We are evaluating his prospects right now. But I like all the weapons they've put around him. They obviously are putting him in a situation where it's time to sink or swim if you're Ryan Tannehill. And, you know, of all the things he does, the one thing I say I like, and we've talked about this before, his ability to run with the football. And it's not something people talk about quite as much. Nobody compares him to, you know, Russell Wilson or Colin Kaepernick or even Cam Newton. But Ryan Tannehill can get out of the pocket. He can make some things happen that way. And that is always a great thing to have out of your quarterback position.
Another name, not to jump the gun, but so we can get as many people in here as possible as we're moving through. Teddy Bridgewater, because Marcus, I know you're a huge fan of Teddy, and of the three of us,
you have
him ranked the lowest by a wide margin too.
Yeah, I do. I've got him at 21 right now, but I'm really feeling like, you know, I may move him up ahead of, you know, guys like Dalton and Cutler. It was less about Teddy and more about I wonder about the guys around him, about the weapons around him, and how much that offense is going to lean on Adrian Peterson now that he's back. I told you, I watched Cordero Patterson video, and I hated my life for like a day and a half.
Had a stomach ache.
I did. I just felt so terrible about everything for a while. You know, and so I'm not big on Mike Wallace. I wonder about the guys catching the football from Teddy Bridgewater. But I like what he offers as a quarterback. I just am not sure about the guys around him.
That's fair.
Charles Johnson is a guy who a lot of people believe is a deep sleeper. Mike Wallace is someone who is what he is. He can stretch the field. He's a touchdown machine, but he doesn't give you a ton of yardage. He was a top 20 wide receiver last year from a fantasy perspective. I think the comeback of Kyle Rudolph is an underrated aspect, because if you look at North Turner's offenses, the tight end is almost always utilized prominently. And Rudolph has shown in the past that this is a guy who is a Pro Bowl MVP who can catch the football and make plays. He just has to stay out of the trainer's room. He could be that underrated part of that Vikings offense that we're not talking about too much right now, that could really help in the development of Teddy Bridgewater becoming a matchup-based fantasy quarterback this year, and potentially even slide him up into that low QB1 range.
Real quick, I'm looking at one particular name. I've got Joe Flacco at 14. Fabs, you've got him at 18. Alex, you have him at 17. I guess that answers the question of whether or not Joe Flacco is elite.
In fantasy, he's another Troy Aikman type.
Why can't we get Joe Flacco's postseason performances in the regular
season? I know. He's awesome.
All right, so I got to point one more out maybe before we move positions here. I guess I'm the only one riding the Geno coaster this year, because if you look at the rankings, Fabs has him at 31. You have him at 24, and maybe I was drunk when I did these rankings. I have Geno at 18.
You know that Geno roller coaster might be the one that gets stuck at the top, and people are stuck up there for
days.
A while. And then Ryan Fitzpatrick comes and
now
saves
here's my defense. Oh man, I got the James Coke.
You got code.
exactly. My defense of Geno. I mean, he might be a little too high. However, Chan Gailey has turned some
bad
quarterbacks into fantasy stars or guys that are relevant.
Chicken salad out of
Ryan Fitzpatrick owes his house and all of his children's clothing and toys to Chan Gailey, because Chan Gailey's offense helped Fitzpatrick get his monster deal. And now, for the first time, like forever, Geno Smith actually has weapons around him too. He's got Brandon Marshall. He's got Eric Decker. He has Devin Smith. I mean, like, remember what he was working with when he was a rookie.
Yeah.
And each of the last 2 years, towards the end of the year, Geno has hit his stride in the last month. I don't know if that's all we're ever going to get.
If I could rank him on the last month of the season, he'd be
on
the top 10 guy.
December's, you know, Geno Smith has played outrageous in December. So why I guess I have him at 18 is this year I'm hoping in his third year he's got a better offensive coordinator, better weapons. He finally puts it all together and carries that into a solid QB2 performance, like a great streaming option, maybe good play in daily leagues and stuff like that, because he'll be cheap in those leagues. And you can get him in the last round of drafts.
A quick mention for Carson Palmer, too. Remember, when he played last year, he was phenomenal. He is not going to be drafted until the late rounds. You can get him as a QB2.
I think franchise got him in round like 14 or 15 in our draft.
Who could potentially be your QB1 last year? He averaged right around 0.7 fantasy points per completion. Drew Stanton came in his absence, averaged right around 0.67 fantasy points per completion, and that's pretty good for Drew Stanton. This offense is geared towards success for the quarterback, and I love John Brown. You've got Fitzgerald there, as well as Michael Floyd and a pass-catching running back in Andre Ellington. So Palmer could be one of the best draft bargains.
I like Palmer a lot.
I do
just
like Palmer.
Just keep tabs on that knee.
Just hopefully everything, he's healthy.
Everything's been good so far.
Should we jump to everybody's favorite position?
Let's move on to the running backs.
No, it's mine.
Let's go. Running back. So this is, I think, where maybe – I won't say the biggest question, but I think certainly the largest debate at this point, because I think we're all agreed that a running back is going to go with the number one overall pick in pretty much every league, at least most of your standard leagues, you're going to go running back number one. But question remains. I mean, Adrian Peterson is back. So, you know, even with a year off, everybody still is big on him, understandably. Eddie Lacy, who had a really good year after he had a slow start, bounced back, played really well last year. Le'Veon Bell, who I think would have been the consensus number one had he not been suspended, depending on the way he played last year. So you've got three guys who could make a claim to be the number one overall pick. And then you've got guys like, you know, Arian Foster, Jamaal Charles, kind of Marshawn Lynch, all hanging on the periphery right there. So let's put it out there right now, Fabs. Who is number one?
Adrian Peterson. He was the player I drafted number one overall in our mock draft. Again, I know there's risk with Adrian Peterson, but I can give you risk with almost every single member of my top 10 running backs, every single one. Maybe sans Eddie Lacy, who might come with the least amount of risk.
Also not as high of a ceiling as the other guys, but...
Correct. So for me, I know he's 30. I know he didn't play last year. I talked to D'Angelo Williams about it, and D'Angelo actually thinks that's a good thing. You got a year to rest, man, after years of punishment on your body. He's going to be motivated. He's playing in North Turner's offense. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. North Turner's offense, not only very good for tight ends, but especially good for running backs. Just asked Emmitt Smith and LaDainian Tomlinson, Lamont Jordan, Frank Gore, Ricky Williams. All these guys had great years from a fantasy perspective under North Turner. He's got a quarterback in Teddy Bridgewater who I think will keep defenses a little more honest than Christian Ponder. And let's put it this way, guys. Peterson is someone who we've doubted in the past, especially after he came off of the ACL. He rushed for almost 2,100 yards.
We don't need to do
that
again.
I have faith in the man. Now, one quick thing here also is that this week on NFL.com, I'm going to be projecting the top two running backs for every single team in the National Football League based on fantasy points per touch, based on 2014 numbers based on offensive coordinator tendencies. And it's going to take me forever. I just started
so
it today.
So the Vikings are Adrian Peterson and
so
Adrian
check that
Peterson.
Out. Yeah, it's probably Adrian Peterson and
Adrian
don't
Peterson.
Say Matt Asiata.
A smidge
Matt
of Jerick McKinnon. A smidge. But Peterson's my guy.
Good.
Marcus is right. Bell would have been the number one guy, and one would have
questioned
it.
That would have been a consensus.
The three-game suspension put a dent into his value.
Real quick on Adrian Peterson. I mean, you know, I think we're all agreed after what he did coming back off a knee injury and running for 2,000 yards, we are not doubting him. He is part cyborg. I think he's in Terminator Genesis, actually. I think he's got a cameo.
Why would you mention that?
Did you see it yet? Was it bad?
No, I'm seeing it tonight. I'm not thrilled about it, so I'll let you guys know next week what I thought.
When Gelhar shows up on Wednesday and he's morose in the office.
or hungover.
You know what the best thing about that movie is that they did a Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator voiceover for my Waze app. And
that's,
so now
that's the best
everywhere
part.
I
wow.
go, turn right.
Wow.
Turn left. Turn right.
Me and Amelia Clark are birthday
I
buddies.
Love it.
We're birthday buddies, me and
that's cute.
And Amelia Clark.
So,
that's it. But anyway, about Adrian Peterson. okay, so obviously we know this guy is a freak. He's 30 years old, and we, you know, traditionally have talked about 30 years being the wall that running backs hit, but we've seen in recent years guys like Frank Gore have been able to succeed, you know, past the age of 30.
Curtis Martin had a huge
Curtis Martin. I mean, there are guys that are there. Is it that it's not the, you know, the downfall we once believed it to be, or are these guys who succeeded just kind of anomalies?
Well, Frank Gore's never going to die.
He's going to outlive
gonna
us
be,
all.
He's going to be the last man on earth.
He will outlive
he's going to look at Will Forte and be like, what are you doing here? And then Will Forte is going to pass away, and it's just going to be Frank Gore. But I think it's part of the times. It's part of the training, the, you know, the health, the regiment these guys are on. And also some of these guys, like with Peterson, he missed a year. Forsett, wasn't he 30 last year? And he had a great year, or 29
And
maybe.
He also didn't have a lot of
but
miles
he didn't, exactly.
Right.
He didn't have a lot of miles. So I think that comes into it. Frank Gore is just an anomaly. That guy
age,
is a beast.
Age is a part of it. I think it's more the number of carries, like Clinton Portis, when he got into his late 20s, you could see him starting to break down because he had so much work. I mean, Terrell Davis broke down before he was 30 because of all the work that he had in a short period of time. And then you're seeing a guy like Peterson, a lot of work on him, but he's coming off a year where he didn't do much. And again, Marcus said it, he's a cyborg. So there are certainly a lot of examples of running backs who hit 30. We can mention Matt Forte right now. Forte is going to turn 30 later on this year. Is he someone to be concerned about? I don't think most people are concerned about Forte, although you're not getting 102 catches out of him.
No, I mean, not with Mark Trestman gone. It's
no
not
chance.
Happen.
Those are going to go potentially to Forte or Forsett, who could see 50 to 60 catches easily. So you also have to consider the depth at the running back position is not great. It's not
true.
Great. You've got a lot of question marks. Can DeMarco Murray do it again? Will Melvin Gordon shine? Will Frank Gore continue to be this energizer bunny from a fantasy perspective? Can Forsett do it again? Can Carlos Hyde take over where Gore left off in San Francisco? Lamar Miller now has Jay
Ajayi.
Thank you to contend with in Miami. See, I like that. T.J. Yeldon is a question mark. Andre Ellington is a question mark. I like Latavius Murray, but he's no guarantee to be the guy. Who's the guy in Dallas? Lots of question marks. So you're going to be almost forced to put your faith in some of these older running backs who might have a lot of mileage on them.
You mentioned Matt Forte, and obviously he had the phenomenal year last year. Now there's a new coaching staff in Chicago that he's going to have to deal with there. I look at him. I look at Marshawn Lynch, two guys who over the last couple years have been just absolutely hands-down fantasy studs, no doubt about it. This year, they both come in, and there are a lot of people that are worried about him. I mean, with Lynch, you've got the huge workload. He's going to be 29, or he just turned 29 in April. He's got a huge workload. Matt Forte is 30 years old. You know, which one of these two do you feel like comes with the least amount of risk?
I'm going to go with Lynch. And that's because he – did you watch him run last year? I mean
– oh, yeah.
He ran like a guy who was 23, 24 years old. He doesn't seem to age. We haven't seen any signs of breakdown. Now, we haven't seen that from Forte either. But Forte is also now going to be in a different offense with a different offensive coordinator who's not going to utilize him as much in terms of catching the ball out of the backfield. And Forte didn't have a lot of rushing yards last year either. Lynch will lose some touchdown opportunities to Jimmy Graham in the red zone. He had 17 last year. He's not going to hit that mark again. The yardage will be there. The touches will be there. The receptions should likely be there as well. But I just have more trust in Lynch than I have in Forte, because Lynch is in an offense that is basically predicated on him succeeding.
Lynch
on the
is the motor in that offense.
Yes, he
whereas
is.
The motor in the Chicago offense kind of remains to be seen this year. Is it going to be Jay Cutler's arm? Is it going to be Forte again? Can he be that motor by himself? Like, he was for a lot of it last year, but there's a lot more question marks. I'm with you. I think Lynch is the safer bet in the top 10 of those two.
It's close, but Lynch is the guy I'd want.
Definitely. Looking at some other names that are interesting in our rankings here. Again, you can find them online, NFL.com/fantasy/rankings. Jonathan Stewart. We know Jon Stewart is leaving the Daily Show soon, but this Jay Stew keeps on rolling along. He'll be back in Carolina for another year. I've got him at 18. Fabs, you've got him at 22. Alex has him at 14. A fairly wide variance of opinions on Jonathan Stewart. Alex, I will let you start since you have him ranked the highest. What do you see? What do you believe in him that has you have him so high?
Well, thankfully, we all have him roughly about in that RB2 range. For Fabs, he's just a touch outside. What I like about him this year is what he put on tape last year. He ran some of the best running I've seen in his career. And now what always kind of dogged him and D'Angelo Williams the last few years was, sure, injuries, but they were a two-headed monster. And you didn't know who was going to get the touches, who was going to get the yards, who was going to get the goal line carries. Now, this backfield is Jay Stew's to lose. Cameron Artis Payne is there, and we'll probably get some rotational work to keep Stewart fresh. But for the most part, it's the Daily Show, and that's what it's going to be.
If I had more faith in his durability, he'd be in my top 20. I mean, 13 games last year, 6 the year before, 9 the year before. The previous 4 years, he played in a minimum of 14 every year, so he was also not a featured guy. It was D'Angelo Williams who was the guy back then. And even D'Angelo, and I mentioned him because, he's a good dude and we talk, and he's even said, hey, what is Carolina doing behind Jay Stew? Because he has a tendency to find time in the trainer's room more often than not. If I had a crystal ball, and boy, I wish I did, and I could look into the 2015 season and see that he was going to play at least 14 games, he'd probably be in my top 15.
If you had a crystal ball and you were using it to check on Jonathan Stewart's prospects, you're doing it.
Well, this is only after I would look up.
There's this thing called the stock market.
The lotto. I'd look into it for that, that kind of thing. But, I'd still be looking it up for fantasy football.
I think.
But, it wouldn't be fun if you knew what was going to happen. It wouldn't be fun.
Injuries are darn near impossible to predict, and I just think it's tough to write him off like that, and I will take that upside in that offense with a healthy Cam Newton and the Twin Towers and Funchess and Benjamin on the outside and hope that Jay Stew delivers.
See, I land kind of in between both of you here, and I love Jonathan Stewart's ability, and I always thought that he was the best running back they had there, and I was always wondering why, even when Stewart was healthy, it seemed like D'Angelo Williams was getting a lot more carries than I would have anticipated. And I have this bad feeling that we're going to see the same with Cameron Artis Payne, that, we're going to see Jay Stew sitting there, having a good season, and all of a sudden you're going to see Cap jump in there and get some touches. So, I don't know. I want to be optimistic, and that's why I kind of have him as a low RB2 sort of thing, that you'll get some opportunities there, but maybe not as many as you think you should possibly.
Wait, Marcus, so you're saying you have a bad feeling about this?
I do.
And Sully's not paying attention.
I know.
Perfect opportunity to use that line.
The Han Solo. Where's Han Solo when we need him?
Oh, man. Where's Han Solo?
This is
perfect
way
opportunity.
This is way overwrought.
Oh,
we went a long way around the block to get to that one.
Yeah, we did.
Anyway, last one in our RB section here. Looking at the Giants, they've got Rashad Jennings, they've got Shane Vereen, they've got Andre Williams. That seems like a mess that I don't really want any part of.
That's true. Until Jennings potentially injures himself, which has been an issue for him in the last few years. But he's the most talented and the most well-rounded running back in that backfield. And we saw that last year and the year before when he was in Oakland, when he really looked good. But when he played, he was good. And he was putting up pretty good fantasy numbers. Now the G-men bring in Vereen, who's the pass catching. He reminds me of a Dave Meggett, because Meggett was a famous Giant in the past. Then you've got Andre Williams, who could potentially steal some goal line work. So you've got three running backs who have three different sort of skill sets that could basically crush every one of that trio's fantasy appeal.
You and I basically have the same rankings just flipped. I had Vereen at 30 because I like his pass-catching ability
in
McAdoo's offense. I think especially if they're running a lot of hurry-up, Vereen could make hay similar to what he did in New England. And then I have Jennings at 34. You, on the flip side, have Jennings at 30, Vereen at 33.
Right.
Marcus has Jennings at 34, then Vereen
at 48.
I've got Vereen
at 40. Admittedly, I can admit that Vereen might be a little bit low, that he could probably stand to be moved up a little bit in my rankings.
It's not Ben Vereen. It's Shane Vereen.
It's Shane Vereen. It's not even Brock Vereen. I know. I'm really pessimistic about what the Giants are doing with their running game and with their running backs. So I just am kind of staying away from them right now. Speaking of committees, and I see you writing it down right now, and I thought about it too, just as you were writing this, Alex. I feel like I'm the only one who has any faith in Joique Bell this year. Like, I feel like I'm the
Tell
only
us why.
One.
Yeah, you are.
Wax philosophic. Why should we believe in Joique Bell?
Because I believe that he still has something left, and I believe he was the better of the two backs between he and Reggie Bush last year.
Oh, he was, for sure.
And I just don't know that Amir Abdullah jumps in right away. I think Abdullah's talented. I think he plays the Reggie Bush role this year, that it still is primarily Joique Bell's. Now, I don't believe Joique's statement that he's going to run for 1,200 yards. I think I did the math. And
I don't think Joique's mother believes that statement.
Right. Like, I think you would have to get like 305 carries to get to 1,200 yards based on what he averaged per carry last year. So I don't see that happening. But I don't know. I still believe that Joique Bell is going to be a decent RB2 and that he's going to lead the way in that Lions backfield.
I've got Abdullah ranked ahead of him because I think Abdullah's going to end up seeing more of the backfield touches as the season progresses. Will Bell be the guy to start the season? Yes. Will he finish the season as the guy? I'm not so sure. He's coming off the Achilles, the knee. He's 29 years old when the season starts. He turns 29 next month. And I know he doesn't have a lot of wear and tear on his body, but this is a guy who has not exactly been a game-changing kind of running back. And I think Abdullah is that type of runner. He's a smaller guy, but he can catch the ball out of the backfield. The Lions coaches are raving about him during OTAs. Let's see what happens in training camp. Remember, Abdullah was given the opportunity to shine in OTAs because Bell's coming off of the injuries.
And he did.
Oh, my goodness, did he.
Oh, yeah. Good. There he goes. Sully's coming back strong.
Get that
now.
Train on the tracks. If you draft a Lions running back, in my opinion, it should be Amir.
I'm the highest on Abdullah of us. I have him at 24. I grabbed him in, I think, the seventh round of our mock. I was happy
I wanted him, too.
Everything I'm hearing, everything I watched, I mean, he's a character guy. He's strong for his size. He's fast for his size. He's got every move in the book. He can juke. He can stiff arm. He can spin. And I think as much as I like Joique Bell and I love his story coming from Wayne State, you know, hometown kid playing for the Lions, it's like Fabiano kind of said, talent wins out at the end of the day in this backfield, and whether or not Joique Bell starts in week one is that, I don't think he'll keep that. He's still going to have value. I think I got him, you know, in the 30s or something like that, but Abdullah's the Detroit running back I want to own.
All right, let's move on. Wide receivers. I feel like, you know, we actually talked a little bit about Dez Bryant at the beginning of the show. I've got him at number 2. Obviously, that's going to change if he decides he's going to sit out some games. I mean, if we get a couple of weeks into the preseason and Dez isn't around, that ranking falls a little bit. But I still feel confident with him as at 2. I've got Demaryius at 3. Sitting at 4 is Calvin Johnson. Now, Megatron is still Megatron. He's going to be fantastic. But are we past the days where he is just automatically, hands down, the number one wide receiver off the board in fantasy football? Is that done now?
I couldn't slide him farther than 2. I think you got to take Brown first based on what he's done the last couple weeks and everything we said about Roethlisberger earlier. But, I mean, this is Megatron we're talking about. And he was injured bad last year for a while. So I looked at Dez. I looked at, you know, Demaryius. I looked at Julio Beckham, and I just couldn't put anybody above Calvin because he's been so good for so long.
I've got Calvin at 3. I've got D. Thomas ahead of him. I got Megatron ahead of Dez. And if you look at the numbers that Megatron had last year, sure, he had a couple of down weeks, but look at what Golden Tate did when he was gone. Golden Tate ended up being a top 25 fantasy wide receiver last year. On the strength of
those like 4 or 5 weeks
that Calvin missed and he
wasn't
up
healthy,
a couple of others. Megatron is the man. Matthew Stafford loves throwing
tunnel
him the
vision.
Football. He's got
absolute
tunnel vision
tunnel
towards
vision.
Him. As long as Calvin and Johnson is healthy, in my opinion, he is a top 3 fantasy wide receiver who I would not be shocked if he ends up number one at the end of 2015.
Does that tunnel vision open up a little bit more simply because of what you said about Golden Tate now that Matt Stafford knows he's got a guy that he's comfortable with. I mean, he never was able to gain that sort of comfort with, you know, Nate Burleson or, you know, Ryan Broyles when he was healthy or whoever else was on the field. He seems to have that rapport with Golden Tate. Does that change maybe his desire to always throw it in the direction of number 81?
Well, to me, he is his first option. He always will be his first option. And again, you look at the games that Tate went off when Calvin was injured. A lot of those targets are going to go to Megatron if he's healthy and on that football field.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
I think if you were to ask Matt Stafford, Calvin Johnson has never not been open in his NFL career.
Calvin would probably say the same thing.
That's probably true. I feel like at this point, before we get into some other names, I feel like I have to give a public service announcement. Odell Beckham's not a first-round wide receiver, y'all. He's just not. He's not. He's very good. He's outstanding, and he's a top-10 guy, and he has a chance to be a top-5 guy. I want to put this out here because I just know he's going to be the most overdrafted player in fantasy football this year. And I know if Chris Wessling, our friend from around the NFL, hears this, he will take umbrage with me because he's already put Beckham in the Hall of Fame. He's not a first-round wide receiver, y'all. I wish we had the little star with the NBC, you know, the more you
the more
know.
You know.
Yeah.
Right? I wish we had that right
next
now.
Next time, Sully, we get the more you know drop for PSAs.
That's all. I just had to get that off.
I will tell you this. I think at least a little bit of the hype has sort of decreased because at the end of last year, that was the question.
It was insane. He was going to be the number one
He's
overall pick.
He's the number one overall pick.
He was.
He's the first-round pick. Now I think people are sort of coming to their senses, unless you're a guy who leaned on him and won a championship because of him, or maybe you root for the New York Giants. And to me, he's a second-round pick, and there's nothing wrong with being a second-round pick in fantasy when you're not a running back. That's pretty good, and he's the top of the second-round pick. And I think there are a little bit of concerns here because he averaged 17 fantasy points a game last year. That's not going to happen again in 2015. Victor Cruz, everything sounds like he could be back, although I'm worried about him coming from that patella tendon injury, but there's a potential where OBJ loses targets there. There's been a lot of talk about how good Ruben Randall's been. They added Shane Vereen as a pass-catching running back out of the backfield. So the targets might not be there in bulk like they were last year with OBJ. Last year when Eli Manning would throw the ball to OBJ in double and triple coverage, maybe he doesn't have to do that this year because he's got some other options there in the offense. Is he still a top 10 wide receiver? Come on, of course he is. First-round pick, Marcus is right, he is not.
Speaking of, I'm looking at this, I think this might be a good place to jump into, is we're all chalk in just different orders for the first seven wide receivers. In some order, it's Antonio Brown, Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, Calvin Johnson, Jordy Nelson, Odell Beckham, and Julio Jones. After that is where it gets a little murky. There's a lot of the same names, but we got them shifting around a little bit. Why don't we talk about these paired guys, Randall Cobb and Manny Sanders, who are both the number two options on their team, but they're the two highest-ranked number two wide receivers we got in this league. Where do you guys got them? What do you like?
I've got Randall Cobb at number 9. I've got Sanders a little bit lower at 14. I don't know. I think that Sanders was, I won't say a one-year wonder. I think he puts up good numbers again this year, but I do think that some of those targets, especially like the short throws, the little wide receiver screens, I think a few more of those go to Demaryius Thomas than go to Emmanuel
Or turn
Sanders.
Into handoffs.
Or turn into handoffs, correct. Randall Cobb, I love, and I think he's going to push Jordy Nelson to be the de facto number. I mean, they're a 1-1A situation in that Green Bay offense, and I think, you know, Randall Cobb may challenge to, you know, to lead that team in targets this year.
I think there's two players that could make or break a lot of fantasy teams because they're going to be drafted so high. One of them is Mike Evans. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have him ranked 8th overall. He was the 10th best wide receiver in fantasy football last year. A lot of that came on the strength of his 12 touchdowns. His yardage and his receptions, not great. They weren't bad, but there's a whole lot of room for improvement with those two. I don't know that he gets back to 12 touchdowns. Maybe he has 10, but the receptions and the yardage go up. I have him as a second-round pick. The second guy is Brandon Cooks. You guys know I had to mention him.
I love Brandon Cooks.
I love Brandon Cooks. If he can produce what we expect him to produce, he could end up being in that low-end wide receiver one territory, somebody who can finish in the 7 to 10 range at the end of the season. And you can get him probably for a 3rd or 4th round pick. He's got to stay healthy. But
that's pretty rich, though.
I would absolutely take him in the 3rd or 4th round. Depending on, again, in our draft, we all do the same thing. We all
because we kind of know how the other people are going to draft.
We all wait on quarterbacks. Which we all go running back and wide receiver crazy.
Know your league. Yes. Know the league you're going to draft in. Don't follow our Yahoo draft patterns or whatever if your league goes quarterbacks first.
Which, by the way,
get a quarterback early. Get a quarterback early. Know your league.
In our mock draft, I took Brandon Cooks in the fourth round.
Right. Well, actually,
that's where he's going to go. Third or fourth round if you're in a 10 or a 12 team league. That's dependent. But he's going to go no later than the fourth round because of the quarterback he has, because of the system he's in, because of the losses the Saints suffered, they were self-inflicted losses with Jimmy Graham and Kenny Stills both being traded. But the opportunities are going to be there for him to break out.
But to peel back the curtain further, Matt Harmon and I are actually roommates. And last night we were talking about Brandon Cooks, and we were both a tad worried just because that third round or fourth round price tag is so high for Cooks in an offense where, like we said, we said earlier, it's going more run heavy. Spiller, let's not forget Reggie Bush in his rookie year had like 95 catches in that offense. Spiller could very easily have close to 100 catches in that offense. So it's going to eat into a lot of those.
Is bold. I think James Coe is like kind of, you know, gotten into your head a little bit.
The ghost of Coe is here. However, somebody else that I took right after you took Cooks that I love in the fourth round is DeAndre Hopkins. Because speaking of targets leaving and targets that are going to come, Hopkins had over 100 targets last year and saw like 140 walk out the door when Andre Johnson left.
Yeah.
And you are not going to tell me that Cecil Shorts or Jalen Strong are going to come in and take 120 targets.
I like Jalen Strong. Yeah. No, he's not going
to. Johnson used to lead the league in targets for years with like 180-plus targets. If Nuke gets that, even with a garbage quarterback under center, he's going to put
up
close to top 10 numbers.
That's the one big question mark because, Ryan Fitzpatrick is not the best quarterback on the planet, but, I mean – Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett, we haven't seen a whole lot out of him. So I think that's the one downfall with him, with Hopkins. I love him. I love the upside. I think he's a top 10 wide receiver from a potential perspective. But the quarterback position could hold him down just a little bit. Like Mike Evans said, the quarterback position held him down last year in Tampa Bay.
Okay, another name, and I saw this. You mentioned our guy Matt Harmon, who – for a guy who just got here, he's gotten his name on this podcast a whole lot already. It's kind of weird, but he was tweeting.
You know, new guy's got to buy lunch, by the way.
We told him that yesterday, too. He tweeted earlier on Tuesday about Brandon LaFell and the fact that Brandon LaFell was a top 25 wide receiver fantasy-wise last year. And, I mean, I'm looking. I've got him ranked at 23.
Woo!
Both have him at 34.
Yeah, and you guys have him at 34. I feel like when we talk about the Patriots and we talk about their pass catchers, we talk about Gronk and maybe Edelman.
Sure.
But there was a point last year where Tom Brady had eyes for Brandon LaFell. And I can admit that I might possibly, be a little bit punch drunk and I have him at 23. But are we kind of forgetting about this guy
now? I might bump him up a little more if Brady's suspension gets dropped. But when you're coming into that offense and if Jimmy Garoppolo's under center for 4 weeks.
That's why he's not higher.
He's going to be gunning for Edelman and Gronk because those are going to be his safest options. That's why I feel like, having him at 34 is in that safe, like, wide receiver 3-ish range discussion where I'm happy to roster him, but I'm not going to reach for him by any stretch yet.
The good thing about LaFell is that when you started him last year, a lot of times he didn't put up great numbers, but he didn't kill you. He had 119 in a touchdown, 97 and 2 touchdowns, 124 and a touchdown, 53 and a touchdown. Then he had a few weeks where he had 62, 98, but he was your 3 or your flex. So in a standard league, he's not killing you. Then he had 38 and 2 touchdowns. The last 3 games, 66, 64, and 70. Not bad numbers from your flex or your 3. And if you're in a PPR league over the last 3 weeks, he gave you 17 catches. I will move him up if Tom Brady's suspension is cut in half or decreased a little bit, but when Brady got suspended, I dropped him down a little bit into that 3 or 4 range. But Marcus is right, and these are the players that you have to look out for. They're not the guys who have the sexy names, but they're the guys who produce.
So here's my argument for Brandon LaFell. I mean, he was second on the team in receiving touchdowns last year. He had 7. Gronk, obviously, number one with 12. Mm-hmm. And you just start to wonder at some point, look, Gronk is a machine. He's just a big hulk of a man who stands there in the end zone and gets open and catches touchdowns. But as teams really try to neutralize him, even if you're Jimmy Garoppolo, don't you want to have another big target you can throw the ball up to somewhere down near the end zone? And Brandon LaFell, I think, offers that. Now, I don't expect a double-digit touchdown season out of him, but I would think 6 to 8 touchdowns is another reasonable number. He can approach maybe 1,000 yards this year. I think that's all doable for him. I do.
Right. Silence. All
right. So then,
should we jump to next?
Enough of that.
But I agree with you. He's a player much like, I would say, someone in the neighborhood of a Marcus Colson who people might be overlooking a little bit.
Yeah.
Opportunities could be there, though.
Okay, so speaking of you mentioned Marcus Colson, speaking of aging veteran wide receivers, we talked about the Geno coaster. I think it's only fair we talk about Brandon Marshall then and what the future holds for him now that he is in Gotham. I loved him last year. I actually have him on a Dynasty League team, which looked a lot better when he was playing in Chicago. I wish I could take that back now. But I do think that he and Geno Smith in some weird way might be good for each other. They'll have to be good for each other on somebody else's roster because I'm not going to draft him. But, I mean, I think he's got potential as a mid to low wide receiver three for you this year.
I think that's kind of where we all have him slotted, too.
Yeah, I look at trends, man. His worst seasons in the league were the seasons where he wasn't with Jay Cutler. And I'll never forget, at the end of last year, and then we had free agency, and then Marshall ended up with the Jets, there was a meme out there an image of a graveyard. And all the gravestones had all of these Jets wide receivers who were really good at one point in their career, went to New York and stunk, like Braylon Edwards and Santonio Holmes.
Braylon Edwards had one good year.
But he went to New York, and he was not a good fantasy player at all. You've got Eric Decker, who, if he didn't have over 200 yards in that last game, would have really had horrible numbers compared to what he did in Denver. Now, of course, you have Mr. Marshall going there. He's always been a top 10 wide receiver in rankings when he's had Jay Cutler. Even when he was in Miami, he was in the top 15. Now I can't trust him.
He had great years in Denver, too, though.
With Jay Cutler. I mean, Jay Cutler was there.
It's true.
So, I mean, I just
a little brain fart right there.
I can't see him putting up these huge numbers without Cutler and with a guy like Geno Smith throwing him the football. That's why I have him ranked at 25. Will I take him as a mid-3 at some point in the middle to later rounds? I mean, I probably would, but you can tell by the tone of my voice, I'm not real thrilled about him this year.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of how a lot of people feel. I mean, I know that's how a lot of people felt when Eric Decker left Denver and went to New York. So I think Brandon Marshall probably fits into the same category.
He does. He absolutely does. There's been a lot. Look at the numbers. There's been a lot of Jets wide receivers who come in. It's almost like Seattle. Seattle had that stretch too, where Nate Burleson, our guy here at NFL Network, went there. Didn't have great numbers. T.J. Houshmandzadeh, same kind of thing. There was a bunch of those type of wide receivers who went to Seattle. Same thing with the Jets now. It's starting to happen with them, where you've got big names going there and floundering in the stat sheets.
Yeah, no doubt. Real quick before we wrap this up, let's get over to the tight ends. There's not a lot.
This one's easy, Marcus.
There's not a lot to talk about with the tight ends. I mean, obviously, Gronk, Graham, 1 and 2.
Gronk.
Some combination of Olsen and Kelsey in the next couple of spots there. The first name that I see that I think is worth talking about is Julius Thomas, who obviously was a beast playing in Denver with that Bronco offense, now goes to Jacksonville, where he'll be catching passes from Blake Bortles. Certainly a downgrade from catching passes from Peyton Manning. I've got him at, or actually, I know Fabs, you've got him at 6.
And you and I have him at 5.
I have him at 7.
I'm sorry, 7.
Oh, you just flipped that.
But I've got him at 5. Alex, you said you have him at 5 also.
I have him at 5.
I mean, I don't know. He was like a reluctant number 5 to me. I don't know, Alex, how did you feel? I mean, you've got him at the same spot.
Same. I had been hating on him more in the offseason, but that's kind of regressed as I was like, well, that's right. This guy is kind of a freak athlete, and Blake Bortles is going to target him. There's been some good whispers out of there, and it's a crapshoot after you get out of that top 4 of tight ends. So I thought, why not? I'll put youth and athleticism at number 5.
The only reason why he's even in my top 7 is because the position stinks this year. It really does. It could improve if some of these younger guys like Austin Seferian Jenkins or someone like a Josh Hill comes out and makes an impact. But Julius Thomas's strength from a fantasy standpoint in Denver was the fact that he was a red zone machine. 24 touchdowns in just 27 games. He might not score 24 touchdowns the rest of his career in Jacksonville because they don't get into the red zone. They had one of the worst offenses in the league last year. Yes, it should improve with Blake Bortles having a year of experience under his belt with the presence of Allen Robinson, who will be healthy and a good sleeper. With T.J. Yeldon back, the offensive line still has question marks, but red zone opportunities are going to be few and far between compared to what he saw in Denver. That's why he's still a tight end one, but he's not going to produce huge numbers. Can I see him catching 65 passes like he did in Denver last year? Sure. 700 yards, somewhere in that area? Sure. 12 touchdowns?
Not
heck to the no.
No.
I mean, six, I think, is his ceiling in Jacksonville this
heck
year.
Heck to the no. Wow, this is a family podcast, Fabs. Let's watch the language.
I know. Right? I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Fiddlesticks.
Yes, exactly.
You know, so, yeah, I think we're kind of all agreed on that. I'm looking at some other tight end names.
Zach Ertz. Well, that's the guy you got to watch out for, Marcus. Zach Ertz.
Well, we've been pumping Harmon on this podcast. Why don't we throw a bone to the franchise, who wrote a great low-cost tight ends piece that you can read on NFL.com/fantasy. And some of those names were Vernon Davis, Delaney Walker,
who
I
like Vernon Davis to bounce back.
Tyler
Eifert.
I think my favorite of those is actually Tyler Eifert, though.
Yeah, no, although, I like Davis.
As we said, Andy Dalton's the drunk guy piloting the barsicle. He's supposed to be the sober one. But I like Eifert. I think they drafted him in the first or second round. He got dogged by that injury. He lost like his entire season, but he's athletic. Dalton's gonna need another safety valve like that, and I think he could put up big numbers in that offense.
We also asked the question earlier whether or not this is the year for C.J. Spiller. Is this the year for Ladarius Green?
Huh.
Silence.
is Gates suspended all year?
No.
No, just four, right?
Yes, four.
So, yeah, I just, you know, again, it's about the trends, and the trend has been the guy is amazing. He's athletic. He's fast. He ran a better 40 than Antonio Brown. I mean, he's an amazing athlete, and sometimes that transcends and translates into being a great player, and sometimes it doesn't. But the four games that we will see him featured in the offense is going to tell a whole heck of a lot of what his value is going to be the rest of the year. But regardless, at best, in a best-case scenario, he's sharing targets with Gates when he comes back. It's not a featured role. It's not like we're talking about Jason Witten, who you know is going to see targets in Dallas, even though Gavin Escobar might see a few. It's not like
Witten.
Yes, of course I did. Yeah, I saw our friend Molly Karam on ESPN. I shed a tear because, you know, she's our pal, and good luck to her now with ESPN. But he's not going to be a guy who, after the Chargers' fourth game, is guaranteed to see those targets. In fact, I would think he's guaranteed to lose them once Gates comes back.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, you still have Malcolm Floyd. You have Keenan Allen, who I think bounces back this year as well. So there are a lot more targets or a lot more guys to take some of those targets.
So, somebody I want to throw it not to sleep on, I think I have him the highest, though, is Michael Rivera, the tight end in Oakland, who David Carr started building a rapport with. You're making a face
and it's not about you, and it's not even about Michael Rivera. This is about my
about
own.
Me.
This is like I'm kind of dealing with my own stuff right now, is that I've, like, the last 2 years, I've jumped on board with Raiders tight ends, and I've been burned. I mean, I was driving the Brandon Myers bus two years ago. I was all about Brandon Myers, and that didn't quite work out. Even last year, I was trying to get on board with Michael Rivera. I even thought about watching Glee. I didn't, but I thought about it. I just... He might be right. He might.
Don't you remember my sad story with Frank Gore where I let him burn me and I stopped drafting him?
I've been hurt too many times. I can't. I just don't want to be hurt.
You had Ricky
again.
Dudley, didn't you?
No, I did not have Ricky Dudley. Okay. I didn't buy into that one. But I've just been hurt by Raiders tight ends too much in the last couple years.
If you're going to scoop up somebody late, or maybe you want to draft like a young guy and an Antonio Gates to bank on his production when he comes back, Michael Rivera could be that guy. There was a stretch last year. I forget the weeks. I apologize. I should have been more prepared for this podcast. However, there was a stretch of like 4 or 5 weeks where Michael Rivera was in like the top 2 or 3 fantasy tight ends and like PPR and targets and stuff like that. So he could have some sneaky sleeper value.
I know. Like, I feel like this is like every year.
Come on, Marcus, come back.
This is like all those years like in high school and college when I picked Kansas to win the NCAA tournament. They always lose in the first round. You know, like I just.
He had a 3-week stretch where he went 783, 838 and 2, 664 and 1. Pretty good. Then he went for 709 and 1. And then in week 15, how do you catch 7 passes and finish with 39 yards?
And not have Alex Smith as your quarterback?
That's hard to do, 7 for 39.
See, you know, damn it, I'm gonna.
But the thing is that
Michael Rivera.
The thing is that when he was bad, he gave you zip.
So
so did a lot of the tight ends.
Oh, but that's what's going to happen this year. Unless you have one of the 5 top tight ends, maybe Zach Ertz moves into that top 6 there. You're going to be playing the matchups a lot of time with these tight ends. That's why you wait to draft them.
Man, I just know it's going to happen. It'll be like round 12 of one of my
drafts. You're going to draft him.
tape.
Real quick, since you mentioned Alex Smith again, I was digging this up throughout the podcast. He has never had a 1,000-yard receiver he has thrown to.
No, it's kind of hard when you have to do all the work.
Only 1 year was there a 1,000-wide receiver while he was a quarterback, and that was the year he only played half the year, and it was Michael Crabtree.
Another reason
to hate on Jeremy Maclin. Sorry, Maclin, you're a great player, but
– it's just not going to work out.
Yeah, it's not
me,
work
it's
out.
You. So that – we'll pretty much do it for us. Want to give a shout out to James Coe. Hopefully you are recuperating well and you're back here in this chair. It's a little bit harder than it looks, James. So we will see. Again, you can find us online at NFL.com/fantasy. Hit up the draft kit. Draft live now for Alex Gallagher, Michael Fabiano, Marcus Grant. We'll see you.